The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
And to finish off our final podcast of 2012, online news editor David Grimm is here to run through the 10 most popular Science Now stories of the year. Now, Dave, I've got the list in front of me. I'm noticing some not so surprising themes here. So we've got some stories with the ick factor. We've got mummies. Everyone loves mummies. There's the physics of everyday occurrences. And no list would be complete without animals having sex.
Right. I think every year we've done this, there's been a sex story. I don't know what it is, but sex sells. And in science, when you add science and sex together, it's often a lot of fun. And this story is no exception. This is a story about turtle sex, but it's not about today's turtles having sex. It's about turtles having sex 47 million years ago and how these turtles, and in fact, 9 couples actually, were preserved in flagrante delicto, as they say. the fossil record preserves a lot of animals, and we've had a lot of very cool creature discoveries because of the fossil record, but it rarely preserves behaviors. And this is one of the rare examples, and in fact, the only example in vertebrates where the act of copulation was actually caught, frozen in time in the fossil record.
I guess my question is, how did these turtles all die?
Well, that's one of the big mysteries here. You know, they found these turtles. There's been a lot of hypotheses thrown out to suggest how the turtles died. Some people suggested that maybe the lake that they were found in, they were sort of found at this bottom of this lake or former lake in west central Germany, was polluted. Maybe there were toxic algal blooms in the lake. One of the ideas floated by the authors of this study was that the bottom of the lake was actually very oxygen poor, and the turtles sank, as turtles often do actually while they're copulating. And when they sink to the bottom, they essentially suffocated. Turtle sex takes a long time, and it took too long in this case, and a lot of turtle couples died during the act.
So then on another continent, scientists were also piecing together another animal's history, but in this case, the researchers had to get a little bit dirtier.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of the stories we cover on the site involve researchers doing interesting field work. They go out to Africa, say, and observe some animals in the wild. This is a field work, but not field work that's very pleasant. This involves digging through a pile of bird excrement that's 2 meters deep that had been collecting for 48 years in a chimney.
What could motivate scientists to want to dig through this?
Well, the scientists knew that the poop belonged to the chimney swift, which is this migratory bird species. And the interesting thing about the chimney swift is that these birds have actually begun to disappear, and scientists don't know why. And they were hoping, at least this team was hoping, that this pile of poop would hold clues, and indeed it did. They found the deeper they dug, and so the farther back they went in time, the more beetles there were, and beetles are a very important component of the chimney swift's diet. But as they went more recent in time, towards higher in the pile, they found a lot less of these beetles, and that sort of led them to suspect that it may be a chemical pesticide, a relative of DDT, that was killing off the beetles, and with fewer beetles around, the chimney swifts began to disappear.
Oh, very interesting. So while some scientists wish to disentangle the past, others, of course, want to look towards the future. And so some European scientists think they've found a way to encode information for further generations.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite stories of the year. And it's not a very fun topic. It has to do with nuclear waste and how do we store it? And how do we store it in such a way that not only does it not harm us, but it doesn't harm future generations? And when you're talking looking to the future, we're talking looking to the way, way future, thousands, tens of thousands of years into the future. If we bury all this nuclear waste, what if archaeologists or extraterrestrials or whatever come down to Earth and they start digging around and they come upon this nuclear waste and it kills them? We want to prevent that from happening. And one way scientists have proposed, this came out of a meeting in Dublin earlier this year, was creating a hard disk that would last for a million or more years.
So what kind of material would work for this sort of thing?
This is actually what they propose is a sapphire disk, and the information inside is engraved using platinum, and the information is encoded in such small characters that you actually need a microscope to read it. But the researchers say that the prototype they developed, you could theoretically read 40,000 miniaturized pages. The best part is that this is a very durable storage medium. It's not like our CDs or our memory sticks of today where information can start to degrade over time. They think that the disk can last 1 million and potentially up to 10 million years. Hmm. Now, that presents one problem. If a human or a post-human or an alien comes across this disk 10 million years from now, chances are they won't speak the same language mm-hmm. than we do. So although researchers have tackled a large part of the problem here, creating information that can be stored for a long, long time, the question remains, what language do you write it in?
Indeed. Well, at least we have, you know, quite a bit of time to figure that out.
That's right.
So then, you know, one story that really jumped out at me when I read it initially online is one scientist's attempt to get to the bottom of a mysterious phenomenon happening in Africa. And I guess since it's on this list, it also caught the eye of many, many other people as well. Tell me about these fairy circles.
Well, fairy circles are these bare patches of soil. They're about 2 to 12 meters in diameter, and they freckle grasslands from southern Angola to northern South Africa. Their perimeters are often marked by a tall fringe of grass. They're really sort of unusual looking. You actually take a look at them on the site. But they're also, as you said, Carrie, they're a big mystery because scientists don't know where they come from, mm-hmm. like how they form. And, you know, there's been a lot of hypotheses put forward. Maybe termites cause them. Maybe the land is somehow grown toxic and it forms these circles. But none of those hypotheses have really been shown to be true. So there's this big mystery. And this is a sort of another example of somebody actually going out and doing some interesting field work. Mm-hmm. The researcher that led the study, in fact, I think he was the only researcher on the study, actually went out to Namibia to check out some of these fairy circles for himself.
And so where did his technique depart from these unsuccessful attempts to understand these in the past?
Well, he actually looked at satellite images over a four-year period. And by doing this, he noticed something that nobody had really noticed before, which is that these circles are, quote unquote, alive, meaning they're dynamic. They disappear and appear at sort of regular intervals. Some of the circles he saw vanished every 24 years. Some lasted as long as 75 years and then disappeared. Even though he was only looking over a four-year period, he was able to extrapolate from some of the satellite images he saw. And so he hasn't really solved the mystery, but at least he's shown something that we didn't realize mm-hmm. before, that these are not just static phenomena, but they're very dynamic. And potentially that could lead to an answer for what the heck these things actually are.
Great. Someday.
Someday.
Now, of all the stories on this top 10 list, and there are six more that we haven't talked about yet, what surprised you the most? Were there any stories in here that you weren't expecting to be quite so popular?
This story was popular and also surprised me in the fact that there's a lot of very tricky and complicated science that we cover, and we try to make it as accessible as possible to the general public. But it's very rare for researchers to come out and say, this type of science is hard. Uh-huh. You don't usually hear scientists saying that. They just go ahead and they try to figure it out. But this story is all about how physics is hard, and specifically a type of physics that involves finding an equation that describes how a system changes over time. These are the types of equations that researchers might use to track the motions of planets. And you can imagine that's very difficult because it's not just the planet you're talking about. It's maybe the moons that orbit it. It's the planet that's orbiting the sun. It's what's happening in the solar system. It's what's happening in the galaxy and potentially even the universe as a whole. So these are very, very complicated equations with a lot of variables. And it turns out the more variables you add, the equations become exponentially harder and harder and harder. And according to computer theory, these equations are actually so difficult that computer theory actually defines them as hard.
So then what new information does this give to scientists?
Well, so on the one hand, it might say something like, don't waste your time because you're never going to figure this out. Although other scientists sort of, as scientists will do, take this as a challenge. They're saying, well, we think it's hard now, but we're eventually going to crack this. We're going to find a way to, as we say in the story, tenderize these equations a little bit, make them a little bit easier to digest. There's things that we've thought have been hard or insurmountable in the past that we've managed to overcome. But still, I love it just because it's an example of scientists sort of throwing up their hands in the air, at least for the moment, and saying, this stuff is really hard.
Well, I'm glad that they're finally admitting it. So we've had quite a bit of variety here in all of these stories. So I think we're all dying to know, what was the number one most popular story on Science Now this year?
Well, I'd love to tell you, Carrie, but you're going to have to take a look at the site to figure out not only what was our number one story of the year, but was also our most popular story of the year. And they are the same story. I'll give you a hint. It's a very silly story.
All right. And what is that website, Dave?
That is news.sciencemag.org. And in addition to the top story of the year, you can also check out the four stories that we didn't cover here today.
Great. Will do. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Carrie.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out all of our news at news.sciencemag.org, including daily stories from Science Now and science policy from Science Insider. Science Live will be taking a hiatus for the next 2 weeks, but be sure to check back in 2013 for live chats on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.